That's what I say to privacy. Ha! What is privacy?
Within social life on the net, there's an underlying tension, almost a civil war, a war between digital hermits and digital exhibitionists. On the one side are the hermits, those who want to play on the social web but demand complete control over any data they share. They dip their toes tentatively into the social media pool and perform a paranoid dance with privacy agreements and terms and conditions notices. They are virtual agoraphobes who lock up their Twitter updates and hide their Facebook comments and pictures from prying eyes. They refuse to sign up for Google's mail service, irked by the targeted advertising resulting from scans of their emails. They shudder when they hear about location check-in apps like Foursquare and Gowalla. And don't you dare post a photo of them up on Flickr, or they'll spam you with takedown requests until it disappears. On the other side are digital exhibitionists. These folks couldn't care less about what they share online. They nonchalantly click through privacy notices while signing up for every new social network spawned by Silicon Valley. APIs allow all of these applications to swap info in an orgy of personal data, Twitter followers, address book entries, Netflix rentals, Amazon purchases, even bank accounts. Exhibitionists are all too ready to let these data streams play together, and they want to make it public. Do a Google search of any one of these folks, and you'll find out more about them than you ever thought you wanted to know. So these are extremes, and the truth is, if you're the typical concerned netizen, you're probably more likely to find yourself floating somewhere in the middle, wanting to play on the social media playground as much as anyone else, but approaching the sandbox with caution. And rightly so. After all, you've heard all the same cautionary stories of people who've been turned down for jobs based on Google searches of their name, of stalkers on MySpace, and governments hacking into email accounts. And enough companies have gotten in trouble with their users for crossing the line. Google, Facebook, and Netflix have all been slammed by multi-million dollar lawsuits in the last 2 years alone for exposing user information. And with all the innovations in location-based services, people are rightly concerned about leaving behind digital breadcrumbs that could be picked up by government or private sector snoops. But with all the hand-wringing over privacy, we begin to ignore the very real possibilities presented by radical transparency. So today, we hear from David Hornick, who, as an investor with August Capital, is backing one of the most unique new entrants into the field of data-sharing social networks, Blippi.com. A social network which shares users' purchases. He talked with David Weinberger about just why someone would want to make their purchases public knowledge and where privacy might go in the future.
I've been thinking a lot about privacy of late, as I increasingly believe that privacy is something people don't care that much about.
And what people? Is this all people, American people?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? I suppose that I look at worldwide internet users as a group most of the time, because I've invested in companies like SixApart or StumbleUpon or those sorts of companies that are touching the world. But since I'm sort of postulating and making this stuff up, I guess it sort of, I maybe am thinking more about the American population and the young Americans as I look how it becomes increasingly bifurcated, that older Americans still think that there's such a thing as privacy and worry about it, and younger Americans are much more willing to say, hey, is there some utility in me giving up privacy? If there is, then I'm willing to trade it. And that's the issue.
So do you think the young actually think in terms of privacy as something that they have and they can trade, or they just sort of don't care? It's not really on their radar.
Yeah, I think probably the latter is closer to reality, right? I think that it's more like, here's an internet experience that you enjoy, and we, the internet company that's providing it to you, have made a set of decisions about how to treat your information as private or otherwise, and the experience you get is influenced by those decisions we've made. And if you like that experience, you don't really worry that much about these sets of privacy trade-offs. And to folks who are older and more concerned about privacy, they would say, gee, that's crazy. Like, that, those choices are crazy choices, and so I would never use that service because it's making unreasonable choices on my behalf. And that's fine. I think that I recently wrote a post on VentureBlog that I called something like Foursquare Fatigue and the Evolution of Privacy. And it was the idea of, you know, this location-based service Foursquare, and that you have to check in, or Gowali, you got to check in to, here's where I am, and you know, you can find me here. And that may be great, it may provide real utility, but it's, but it gets annoying over time. So wouldn't it be better if it just checked you in, like, hey, you've been sitting there for 25 minutes, so you must be at the Berkman Center, so we're just going to tell the world you're at the Berkman Center.
Foursquare gets around this by presenting itself as a game, in which there are points that don't matter. So I'm old, so I'm confused by Foursquare. It adds the game motivation.
Yes, it's a game. So. You, if you are the person who's at a location most often, then you are declared the mayor. And being the mayor has a certain unknown set of value, you know, of values to it. And therefore, it is a is inherently good thing to be the mayor. For example, I was at lunch the other day at a restaurant I frequent called Kaigetsu, and a friend of mine walked by and looked at me and he said, "Ha, I'm the mayor of Kaigetsu." And I said, "Ha, I'm checking in now." And by the next day, I was the mayor again.
So could he have you, you know, give you 20 push-ups or something? Is there any value to being mayor?
In some places, there is a value to being mayor. Some bars I've seen give free drinks to the mayor, or, you know, discounts to the mayor, those sorts of things. Although when you think about it, the economics don't really make that much sense, that one person, that the incentive is for one person to get these particular discounts or freebies, because really it's very hard to be the mayor after a certain period of time, and it won't incent the larger group of people to come back time and time again. So really, the mayor, it turns, so I'm an investor in a price optimization company, and the one thing that I have learned, I don't know how much else I've learned, but the one thing I certainly have learned is that your best customers are not the people you need to give free things to. They're your best customers. It turns out it's the people who aren't your customers, or who you want to be your best customers. Those are the ones to give the free things to.
Well, at least it has the advantage of telling your Foursquare social network that this is a bar or whatever that you like, that you frequent enough to become mayor, even though they're not going to get the discount.
That's true. That's true. You get the kind of social relationship. And it's true. I am the mayor of four things. I am at, maybe, I think I still am, Kaigetsu, this Japanese restaurant on Sand Hill Road, which is fabulous.
So you got your free meal right there. So.
There, yeah, right. So I hope that I will. Joni's, which is this breakfast place on California Ave in Palo Alto that I have declared the new Bucks. No one else has declared it, but I have declared it the new Bucks, and they have this great oatmeal, and I go there every morning. And then I'm the mayor of August Capitol because it is my office, and so it would be, you know, I guess my partner Howard might be the mayor of August Capitol, but he obviously doesn't have the fortitude to remember to check in.
No, you've crushed him.
I have crushed him like the bug that he is. And then I am the mayor of Mayfield soccer fields, which just tells you that apparently my daughter has too many soccer practices, and anyone could unearth me, you know, unseat me in that.
You know,
one.
There's a patch of poison ivy in that Mayfield soccer field. I've been meaning to remind you to get rid of.
Totally, absolutely. Like I should be in charge of maintenance.
Yeah, then there would be some sort of skin in the game for Foursquare if you actually had to do the maintenance.
Right, exactly. Then I should get a discount. Very clear. Like if I'm the sous chef at Kaigetsu and I got to
have clean
a prayer.
Up afterwards.
Yeah, right. Like who's clearing these plates?
So publicness is a new good. It's not just that privacy is something that the young are trading in. It's that the publicness seems to be the default and seen as a good thing, including in making public stuff that an older generation like me would never do, such as, for example, making public as a default your, say, credit card purchases. And this is something you know something about.
Interest in. Yeah, I mean, actually, so if you go to blippy.com, blippy.com/David Hornick, you can see everything I buy. Right now, why would you want to do that? Well, it might be interesting.
No, why would you want to do
it? Okay, I was going to get to that. I think that's totally fair. Yeah, why would I want to do that? That's a good question. Like, why would I want you to know that I spent $7 at Starbucks, right? Well, partially it's that I don't mind that you know. So feel free to know that I spent $7 at Starbucks. Partially it's that I want to evangelize the things that I think are great. So as well as being the mayor of Kaigetsu and the mayor of Joni's, if you go on Blippi, you'll happen to notice that, gee, he's always at Kaigetsu and he's always at Joni's. And then there's a comment section. So not only can you see that I'm always at Joanie's, but it'll say, people have asked, like, what do you have at Joanie's? How do you like Joanie's? And I will say, I enjoy the oatmeal at Joanie's because it is delicious, right? So I have this sort of back and forth. So then I can say, oh, let affiliate me with Joanie's because I like their oatmeal. And so David equals Joanie's equals oatmeal. So that's, you know, I think there's certain value in that.
I'm sorry. You lost me on the affiliate and that there's certain value in that. What's the sense of affiliation? Is this a mental affiliation or is Blippi doing an actual?
No. I mean, Blippi will tell you that, you know, so-and-so has bought stuff here the most, or it'll also tell you who else has bought stuff here. So who else has purchased stuff at Joanie's? So you can see everybody else who's eating at Joanie's. So imagine you're going to, and again, this is, so I'm talking about the value to me. The value to me is that I might associate things that I buy with the person I am, right? This kind of personhood of stuff.
So you're establishing a self, so to speak, self of stuff.
Right. Which, you know, on the one hand, that sounds kind of crass and, you know, when spoken. On the other hand, so here's an example. One of my credit cards, whenever I buy something on it, it appears on Blippi. The other credit card, it doesn't. And
That's the one I want to see.
Okay, right. So that one, yeah, right. Now, it turns out that the one that does tends to be business charges. So I use that credit card as my business credit card. And so it tends to be kind of lunches and United Airlines tickets and whatever else. The other one is just, what am I up to on the weekend? But the other weekend, I was at SF MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in San Francisco, and I was buying an art book in the store. And I went to put it on my non-Blippi credit card, and I thought, no, like, this is something I want on Blippi. Like, I want people to, I want people who are into art to say, oh, Hornick likes art. That's interesting, right? And then engage in that little, in that conversation. But if I didn't put it on Blippi, then they don't know that I'm buying an art book at SF MoMA, right? So suddenly there are choices you can make about the person you project by virtue of the things that you are buying. And it's not just buying, like, it also integrates with iTunes and Netflix and Zappos and whatever. So it's like, what shoes do you wear? What movie are you watching? What app is on your iPhone, etc.? And so you can learn a lot about a person by which apps they choose to download. Are they, you know, is it all games or is it utilities or that sort of thing?
And who gets to see this? Is it totally public or
well,
is
you
it
get
a
to
social
choose.
Network?
No, it's a social network. So you can choose. So there's sort of three versions, right? There's this is totally open. And whatever I buy is automatically appears, whatever I rent, boom. And then there's the closed version, which is I have a profile and you ask permission to see it. So, hey, David, is it okay if I see your stuff? And I go, nah, okay, you can see it. And then there's this middle ground, which is it's open, people can see it, but you pre-approve sets of purchases. So before something becomes open, you have to kind of go through and go, yeah, that one's okay, that one's okay, that one's okay.
So it was maybe 20 years ago. I'm bad at, you know, that sort of thing. Let's say 20-ish. It was ish years ago, actually.
Yeah.
When a professor somewhere-ish went to his class and gave them his credit card statement for a month, their task was to see how much they could figure out about him based upon his credit card charges. And they figured out everything. That was, you know, but the point of that story when it came out was, oh, my God, you should be afraid that in case somebody should violate even a single credit card statement, they're going to know everything about you. And now this is a complete inverse.
Isn't that interesting?
Let's just post it out because it's good for everybody to know every little thing that I
got to go find that story because that's really interesting.
Well, I think I gave you plenty to track it then.
Yeah, now I know. It's
an
like
ish.
A professor sometime.
Yeah, I think in New York.
Yeah, in New York. Oh, well, good. I'm glad we narrowed it down to the largest city in the world. That's good. Thank you. No, it's really, I mean, I agree. I think it's really interesting that you have that. So Stephen Colbert did a little thing on it where he basically said, you know, here is the thing, Blippi, or whatever. He said, it is almost as fascinating as, you know, pawing through my box full of receipts. And he was being facetious, like, oh, you know, like, who cares about that stuff? And to a certain extent, it's true, right? Like, oh, you bought milk and you bought crackers and you bought, you know, bottled water or whatever.
So are you going to be fine when people start to take the Blippi data, go through an API or they scrape it or whatever they have to do in order to get masses of it about an individual or a group, let's say about you, and start to draw conclusions about you and use it to A, target you for advertising, B, to put you on a no-fly list because they misinterpreted that the book that you were buying was in fact, and C, to expose you when you run for public office and to say, do you see, he was buying art books in San Francisco, you know what that means, yeah, or whatever.
Right.
Are you going to be happy
when
this is out in the public and gets to be – you've lost control of it, of course, because it's in the public.
Yeah.
And people can draw whatever conclusions they want to for good or ill purposes.
You and I are at least going to say, oh, let's be thoughtful about this, right? Let's not just dive in headlong. I mean, my big concern with my children is that because they have come into this as if this is normal, then they won't even question it. They won't even think about it. They'll just be like, oh, of course, like throw up my data. It's all good. And then they, buy things that they might otherwise think twice about or whatever. And whereas you and I have started in privacy land and we're marching towards no privacy land. And so these are reasonable questions. And so from where I sit, the first thing you posed is advertising. I have to say that one of the reasons why I love this trade-off between privacy and utility and why I'm perfectly happy to give up privacy in this respect is that I want better ads. I like better ads. I don't have any problem with someone saying, we should send an ad for a particular car when David's looking for a car, or we should, the fact that my youngest child is now 8, don't send me an ad for diapers. I just don't need it. And if you can use my data to know that I don't need that, great. If you know that my wife is a fanatic about Paris and you can send me an ad about something in Paris that is interesting and I wouldn't have otherwise seen, I view that as a utility, an incredible value to me, even though it's also a value to the advertiser. And so I think that by using this data, we're going to get in a situation where it's better for the advertiser and it's better for the consumer, and that would be great. So I'm a little bit of a I'm either a utopian or a total Pollyanna. I don't know which, but I'm one or the other when it comes to kind of advertising and privacy. And I put recommendation engines absolutely in that exact same category, right? The recommendations I get from Amazon are just a very focused ad. And sometimes they're totally wrong, but they're getting better. And every time they get better, I feel better about it. So that's great. No fly list? Well, that's an interesting question. Like, I think that ultimately what will happen is that things like governments, et cetera, will have to evolve their standards in ways to better understand the data. And there may be this kind of crash, this tension in the interim where we have these sorts of things that happen because I buy a book on, building explosives or, whatever. Imagine a kid's doing a science fair project and it would be really interesting to build a teeny tiny little blowing up thing based on elixirs of some sort, whatever. But at scale, it's incredibly dangerous. Well, is there an expense to me buying it? Is there a cost? I think there is, and there always will be. But I think that ultimately society will have to wrestle through these things and figure out more granular ways to deal with it. And I'm fine with that tension in the interim. I think that there's enough value on the other end of that tunnel that I'm willing to march through it.
There's been some controversy in transparency circles that a fear that much as we all love transparency, at least all, all of us people who love transparency, anyway, that it makes it too easy for opposition researchers in various fields, whether it's politics or elsewhere, to find the one bit that will sink you and then magnify that as if it's the only thing. Do you worry about, are we going to change our attitude towards that sort of opposition research, or are we all just going to suffer from it?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm constantly depressed at how myopic people are. And so either over time we get this incredibly bifurcated society and everybody hates each other and, we've got a real problem. Or at some point people go, geez, Starbelly Sneeches and non-Starbelly Sneeches isn't really working that well, so maybe we should not focus on that.
So, I mean, one possibility is that we'll become more forgiving, that we'll say, well, everybody has, something in their credit card listed blippy that they're ashamed of, and it just can't, we're all human. Another possibility is that we will continue to be so highly motivated to dig out the one incriminating seeming thing that we'll end up in the bifurcated world. How hopeful are you that we might... Is there another possibility, or are you just sort of hoping that we learn to be more forgiving?
But it's funny. Earlier I was talking about, Blippi tracks your – so it's, you bought innocuous things. Like, you bought milk and you bought blah, blah, and then you bought bottled water. And then I thought, actually to some people, the fact that you bought bottled water is actually not innocuous at all. It is evidence that you're a bad person, Right? So
green reasons.
Yeah, or, yeah, right. Like, oh, green, you know, you shouldn't, no one should be buying bottled water. So that's, you know, so much for innocuous. And what are you, what milk are you buying? Anyway, so I think this stuff, it will be interesting, and it will be about how people interpret it, no question. But I had this conversation with someone this morning about this idea that maybe at some point, because there's all this data and the data is being gathered, and some of it's public and some of it's private, but it's all out there, right? That at some point there may be this moment in time, this Big Bang moment, when some pernicious, evil hacker person unleashes all of this private data on the planet, and suddenly everything is available, like your medical records and your social security numbers. Suddenly everybody's private information is available, period. But you can envision, this doesn't seem outrageous, the idea that someone could gather up and then free all of this information. And once it's free, it's never going back, right? It's not like, that I didn't have that illness. You didn't see that. Don't look over there, right? It's been replicated. It's gone. What happens at that time? One of two things happens. Either people go completely freak out and become maniacal about privacy. Okay, now we have to really hunker down and, we got to control it. Or in the alternative, they go, well, that's not so bad. Right? Like, why do we care so much about that? You really? You had syphilis? Me too. Like, whatever, you know, like maybe that one's a little harsh. Maybe that's a little harsh, right?
Well,
but on the other hand,
it's exactly, I mean, you could pick a safer example,
but that's exactly it, right?
Right.
And then is it fine? Like, if you find out that, hey, everybody's information, then maybe you say, okay, good. Now that that's out, now that we're done with that, how can we put this information to better use instead of trying to pretend like we should care about this stuff staying behind a firewall? And I don't have, I mean, I'm not a radical. I'm not like, oh, we got to free all the information or whatever else. But I just think that's a very interesting question. Like, what will happen?
If everybody's fetish is public,
that's that.
Do we care? Suppose they held a fetish and nobody came. I'm not sure that's exactly anyway.
Well, you know what? People don't talk about it a lot. But the reality is that pornography on the internet, it turns out it's big. There's like, people like seeing naked people on the internet. And yet nobody talks about it. People don't talk about pornography on the internet. And yet it's the majority of people on the internet are looking at pornography, right? Now, maybe, you know, do I have that statistic? I don't have that statistic. But I strongly suspect that, you know, at least 51% of people on the internet are at some point or other looking at pornography on the internet.
Right now. Or looking
right now. You know, like,
closer to the truth. So.
But yeah, and we're... And yet, this is one where we go, oh, you know, porn, crazy, nobody does, nobody would do that, you know, whatever. And so, really, like, maybe porn would be better if everybody admitted that they were looking at it, and then we could, like, fix it, make it better porn. I'm just saying, like, you know, there are utility arguments.
You have your VC hat on.
Yeah, I'm going to get right, but for the fact that I have, you know, foundations and universities investing money in my fund, I would focus on that. But I don't want to, you know, I wouldn't want to be controversial in any way.
As always.
Exactly. I'm mild-mannered, frankly.
David is a very nice man who likes oatmeal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Hornick is an investor with August Capital. You can find out what he's been buying lately at blippi.com/David Hornick. And, of course, you can find links to more information on our show notes at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This episode was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, with David Weinberger at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.